Blog Talk Radio.
Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Hello, everyone.
Hello there, back.
How's it going?
Well, you know, it's been the kickback of Mercury retrograde. I think we survived that.
Barely.
Yes. Yes, barely. But
yeah,
more forward than backward now.
Yes, yes. And yes. Happy equinox to you, Elvira.
Happy equinox, Phoenix.
Thank you.
Right back at you.
Thank you.
So, after that momentary glitch of hello, we do need to say that there was a little bit of a glitch last week that we did have at the very end where there was some dead air time that occurred. We're still trying to work it out, but we want to just let everyone know that that was something on our end.
We think.
So we could blame
I'm blaming
it on
Mercury.
I'm blaming it too. There you go.
Yeah.
So, what was your week containing, other than obviously the excitement of not having Mercury retrograde?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Elvira and I checked in before the show started, so you know, she already knows all my drama. But then I've been sitting here thinking, and I realized the beginning of my week was kind of stressful. There were some things up that I was feeling a little anxiety around. I had a few things that were a little disconcerting, and then Mercury went direct, and it was like all that stuff went away. So I am really, I'm noticing more and more the impact that the planets do have on my life, especially my own chart, and I've been learning more about all of that. It's endlessly fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
My rising sign is Pisces, and I'm just noticing more and more how much more sensitive and emotional I'm becoming. And so all of that was really up this week. Just my regular flow was very different. And it was almost to the minute Mercury went direct. All of that stuff just kind of, it was like a contraction, and it just lessened. Oh, and I can relax again.
Birth came, and thus it was.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then this weekend, actually tomorrow, is the North Bay Reclaiming. We put on 8 public rituals a year.
Uh-huh.
Tomorrow is our fall equinox ritual in Sebastopol at Cebu Falls, so I'm looking forward to that. We had some last-minute Mercury issues with paperwork and insurance and contracts and all of that, but it's all sorted, so tomorrow's going to be fun.
All right.
Stay with community.
There you go.
How about you, lady? How are you?
Well, you know, it was actually not as bad. It's almost like, for me, it was starting to be like I was swimming in a Mercury retrograde energy, and I just kind of got used to dodging the various things, and then suddenly it went direct, and I'm going, spabing, you know, there's nothing, no resistance.
Yeah.
So that was kind of interesting. I did have an interesting thing happen when I was at a friend's house last Saturday evening, and she was talking about a group that she goes to and has for many, many years, and they're older people,
mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a meditation / taking care of biz kind of a thing, where it's through the Kaiser So she was telling, you know, she was listening and somebody was talking about, oh, well, we should do this voodoo doll and stick pins in it. And they kind of
randomly?
Just randomly. And my friend who knows who I am and what I do, because we've known each other for, you know, a couple of, you know, at least 10 years.
Yeah.
So she says, the woman said, well, is that really something that can be done? And my friend said, well, yes, actually, and I know someone, and it's not necessarily voodoo, but I know someone who does this magical stuff. And she says, really? When they gave my name, and then she started talking about the tarot and the magic spells, and this was taking, of course, away from the group consciousness of what was going on, but everybody was getting all excited, and so they tried to get back centered and everything, and she said, my friend said, it kept popping up, people kept wanting to ask questions and find out everything, and I thought, my heavens, you know, now my name is, you know, not just my name, but the consciousness of what people were asking, and she was able to sort of give a lot more information because she knows me now and she knows what I do, and she's been very open about appreciating what I do.
Right, that's so cool.
I know. It was just so random. I'm like, whoa.
I love that. That's one of the first questions I think I get from, you know, to use that cliched word, muggle. Muggles are like, does it really work? Does spells really work? Does magic really work?
And, right.
Well, yeah. I've been doing this for over 20 years now. I wouldn't keep doing it if it didn't work.
No kidding. It's like, why would I if it doesn't do anything, you know? But, yeah, so that was a really nice compliment and acknowledgement, but also just the idea that it wound up in a very staid group of elderly people that were doing something maybe a little slightly, you know, like meditation things, but totally not, you know, and they were obviously, many of them were more stricter religious people, but they were certainly the ones to ask the most questions, and they weren't negative.
Neat.
Yeah. So there's
like
my...
You may have some new clients.
Well, you never know. You never know.
Nice.
So our topic, I guess, today is...
Da-da-da-da!
The fall equinox.
And I've we're going to talk about Mabon and that word later.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought about something right before the show started.
Yep.
Mabon is so much easier to say. It rolls off the tongue. It's a sweet little word. And fall equinox is just, it doesn't roll off the tongue as beautifully as Mabon does. So it's no surprise that people love that word so much.
Yeah, and even if you added autumnal, it's like it gets congested.
Yeah.
And I may say that sometimes we have congestion due to allergies during these times, but obviously we're talking about a set of words that make it more difficult to... say.
Yeah.
So, with that in mind, fall equinox being as it is, what is it?
Oh, from a sort of more scientific point of view, it's the point where the sun crosses the celestial equator. And it is the actual moment, the minute, the second that the equinox officially happens is when we have an equal amount of daylight and an equal amount of darkness, of nighttime. And as soon as that moment is done, we fall into the dark half of the year. We start to have more darkness every day rather than daylight. Up into the equinox, we've had more daylight and out of the hours of the day that we have. Mm-hmm. And now the reverse will be true, which is sad for me.
I understand. A friend of mine was talking about, you know, the daylight leaving so quickly. And, of course, those of us that have daylight savings time imposed upon us.
It's going to get even worse.
It's going to get even worse.
I hate daylight savings.
I know. So, speaking of, you know, this is the northern hemisphere. What happens in the southern hemisphere?
Right.
It becomes the opposite.
Yes. So, then the opposite of the fall equinox is the spring equinox. So, as we are descending into fall and winter, the folks in the southern hemisphere are actually rising into spring and summer. But when I was younger, I didn't understand the concept. I just thought, oh, they're the reverse. So it's just called the reverse. But no, it's literally the weather is reverse.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it kind of makes it interesting because obviously we live here, we practice here. But if we have clients that are in the opposite the Southern Hemisphere, mm-hmm. we have to take that into account. And I think that that's another one of those, well, you know, we are universal now. We don't just live in our little ballywick and practice our magics and our events here at this particular time and place.
Right.
Now, obviously, this is considered a second harvest festival.
Yes, and especially here, I think I mention this in every show, we live in Northern California, and the grape harvest is happening just today. When I was driving my daughter to school on the freeway, I saw two huge big rigs filled to the brim with grapes.
Ah, yes.
The wine harvest is a-happening.
And it used to be up here, harvest was actually hops before the prohibition. And
yeah.
then, of course, they went to apples during prohibition. And then now we're back to grapes. And I think there's an actual, someone was telling me there's sort of a resurgence of the hops,
yeah.
of the crop.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we tend to have much more grapes, though.
Yeah, sadly. I mean, it's nice and all, but we have a little too much grapes happening now.
I think so.
Yeah.
I
like
think
more
so.
Apples.
Well, if you want to go out to my backyard, I've got three apple trees that have been dropping them like flies. So basically, this is a time, as we said, of harvest. So it would be a time of sharing the bounty of nature and giving thanks. So no wonder we have Thanksgiving within this particular time frame. And I
right.
think it's not just the United States
right.
having a Thanksgiving based on their mythology that they put in.
Right.
It is thanking nature, mother, the ground that has given birth to all these wonderful things and we've harvested.
Yeah, and Canada has their Thanksgiving, with my little air quotes here, in October.
Mm-hmm.
So really it's this descension into the darkness
mm-hmm.
is the time to remember all that we do have, all
mm-hmm.
of the gifts that we do have.
Exactly.
So it totally makes sense. The,
right.
the secular holidays match the seasons that we're falling into.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They just have added different kinds of names and the concepts. But I know that we talk about going into the darkness. It means descending.
Yeah.
Descending into the dark time of the year in solar, lunar, you know, the solar
mm-hmm.
aspect. But it's also descending into our own darkness
mm-hmm.
and bringing, you know, going into inside of ourselves and seeing where things are at down there and what's happening.
Right. Yeah, and you know, there's actually two thoughts that come to mind when you say that. And one is the looking at what we've harvested,
mm-hmm.
I think sometimes we forget to reflect. If our lives were a garden, what would be flourishing right now? What would be ready to pick?
Mm-hmm.
What needs to be pulled?
Mm-hmm.
What's ready to go underground, and what seeds can you start collecting? And looking at that as a metaphor for your own life, what have you been working on? What fruits have you brought to fruition
right.
that you can now enjoy? And celebrating that and honor that. Sometimes we're so in our daily grind and in the process that we forget to take a moment to reflect on what an amazingly good job we've done on whatever it is that we've done.
Right, right.
And I think that's important.
I know that actually, which is kind of an interesting factor, I have been going through my clothes closet
yeah.
and looking at different things and going, you know, harvesting the concept of letting go of things, which is sometimes much harder. But it also means that I've given away. I've let it go. I've given it, repurposed it to some other place. And I think that's the same concept here.
Mm-hmm.
We do it physically in our lives, but then with consciousness, and then we can do it with our emotional and our mental states. We can do it with the projects that we have put out there that are coming to pass, or, you know, where are they in the process?
Right.
So
yeah.
I know that there's just more than just a spiritual basis. Especially in our day and age.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I also think it's important to acknowledge sometimes in modern paganism and in ritual, it can be this stealing against the darkness and protecting yourself against the darkness and getting ready to face the darkness, like the darkness is this terrible thing.
Right.
And it's not.
No.
The darkness is great. It's awesome. Think of all the seeds that grow and germinate in the dark soil.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel it's really important, especially when we create public ritual or coven ritual or ritual for our own growth and process, is to remember that diving into the darkness isn't facing some terrible thing. It's actually really needed. It's really a beautiful thing. It's what makes us whole and complete, acknowledging the light and the dark and these two parts of ourselves. And You know that there's this Oak King, Holly King thing, Wicca, right? The king of the winter and the king of the summer. And at this point, this is one of the moments where those two energies come together, where they're equal, where they're in balance.
Right.
And recognizing where we can do that in ourselves and preparing. The Druid group that I used to practice with many years ago, the time of the equinox was when we started our own descent to go internally and start looking at how what we needed to process during the winter months so we could emerge in the spring having healed one of our wounds.
Right.
One of our spiritual wounds.
Right, right.
So there's a lot of beautiful things that come from the dark.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely, as you can tell by, you know, whatever you have done your research on, I've done my research to understand the descent myths that occur.
Yeah.
We have the descent myth, of course, Persephone being taken into the underworld and Demeter looking for her. And that is this time now of the illusion mysteries of the Greek traditions. And then there's, you know, Inanna.
Yeah.
And there's two versions of Inanna, of course. We have a couple. We've been talking about these differences that seem to occur.
Right.
And you have the one where Inanna goes down to the underworld to deal with her sister, the dark sister,
right,
Eriskigal. And she basically has to give up all these things and go down into the situation and deal with her. And then after that, we wind up with another version with Inanna and Tammuz, her consort, her male consort, to go down and find him and bring him back.
Right.
So
much more modern version.
Yes.
Right. And the you said Tammuz. I also know him as Dumuzi.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right. It's kind of
depending on what you
depending
read.
On where you read and how they translated it. And it's very Sumerian. It's a Sumerian myth either way.
Yes.
And so they also talk about the dark queen.
Yes.
There is that whole process of the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you even think about how the fairy tales that they wound up with Snow White and the dark queen that gives her the apple and, you know, I mean, the dark part of oneself or externally.
Right.
And facing it. And, you know, there was a line I use a lot with my clients in the movie Labyrinth with David Bowie.
Yes.
And at the very end, the main female
magic dance.
We're going to have a lot of things out of here tonight. And she turns to the character of David Bowie and said, "You have no power over me."
Yes.
And that is really the essence of what this is all about.
Right.
Is that it has not got the power over you.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, I listen to it a lot. My daughter loves that show, so obviously there was a lot of that.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting, going back to Inanna for a moment, is in some versions of her tale, you know, Inanna is the queen of heaven and earth, and Eriskigal is the queen of the underworld,
right,
where spirits are reborn, but they're reborn through her. And Inanna must go down and release all of the trappings of what it is to be queen and face her dark sister. And her dark, you know, Inanna has all this power and all this beauty and all this prestige, but Eriskigal, her dark sister, is the one who's doing all the effing hard work.
Yes.
She's birthing the souls through her body.
Yes.
And Inanna has to come into balance and face that. And some tales believe that they are two sides of one coin.
Right.
Inanna is the queen of heaven and Eriskigal is the queen of the underworld, and they are actually one. I don't necessarily believe that part of it, but
well.
But it does feel sweet. It does feel like it makes sense for this time of the year as well.
Right. And, again, we call the dark sister the light sister. You know, you've got the same concepts in Isis and Nephthys, which we talked about before in the Isis show, which is the dark sister and the light sister.
Right.
So you do have the balance here of mythology and spirituality and oneself coming into place.
Right.
So I think that we come into that. We have either the Trinity, which is Demeter, Persephone, Hecate, or you have the duality with Inanna, Eriskigal.
Or the Oak King and the Holly King.
The Oak King and the Holly King.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And also, You know, we mentioned the grapes and the wine that's here in Northern California, but also in Italy, in the cult of Dionysus, this is the equinox is the celebration of the wine harvest, and it's dedicated to him. He is the god of the vine.
Right.
So Dionysus is one of my very special beloveds. So I'm working on an altar to him right now. It's a new relationship. It's still fresh and new and exciting.
Oh, my darling, that sounds so delightful.
I'm blushing a little bit. Yeah. I don't, for many years, I did not work with any male deity, and I wasn't intentionally Dianic, but it's just kind of how it ended up. Mm-hmm. And then another male deity that I won't talk about tonight showed up and wouldn't go away. And then Dionysus and I had an interesting meet up, I guess.
There you go. Hook up.
We had an interesting hook up, and now I'm finding myself chasing him. I just adore him. So, yeah, last night I did a little cleaning of his altar and burned some incense for him. And did a little libation. Dionysus likes libation.
I know he does.
Yeah.
I know he does.
Don't skimp on the wine.
Hey, you know, I actually think about Percy Jackson and the series of that, and Dionysus, who's played in, you know, who goes into this particular situation, and what he's forced to do in this particular thing is he could no longer drink wine. He has to drink soda.
That sounds terrible.
I know it does.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny, actually, when you think about how they create the character and whatever. But you were saying that. I'm going, no, it's not soda.
No.
But.
No. But you can see, you know, we touched on a Middle Eastern myth with Inanna, and we touched on Egyptian myth with Isis and Nephthys, and now we have this more Mediterranean myth with Dionysus, and all of these gods are connected to this harvest, second harvest, and also the point of balance, right? We're returning to that again. Uh-huh. There is a magical moment that the planet has. To just get scientific, you know, to think about that. It's pretty intense.
It is. It really is.
Yeah.
To be aware of that now, considering the ancients did know this,
right?
Because you have all the various stone circles, and the biggest and most famous that we know of is Stonehenge, of course.
Yeah, definitely the most famous.
Yeah, and then Callanish, which is on the Isle of Harrison Lewis, up there in Scotland and the Hebrides. And these are fascinating that these were not just small little things. They were built and they were set up for these particular events that were astronomical.
See what you can accomplish when you're not on Facebook all day?
I know, really. Really. Oh, well.
But these monuments, these megaliths, are in alignment with the rotation of the Earth. And
exactly.
At the solstices and the equinoxes, something magical happens in those rings of stone.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, we try to replicate as much as we can in any rituals or gatherings that we have, if we could do it on the exact timing, to see that.
Which is challenging.
It is challenging in our modern day. I mean, we could be in the middle of work. We could be in the middle of, God forbid, trying to sleep.
Or traffic.
Which, you know, we don't want to get started on that.
No. But it is a challenge for a modern pagan or a modern practitioner of witchcraft who wants to be super legit.
Yeah.
And on the dime.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to be able to necessarily align with that specific moment. Elvira and I were actually discussing that before the show started, that technically we're past the equinox right now. It happened yesterday. You know, so we're talking about these concepts, and we're going to offer a little bit of a small little ritual that we're all going to do together, actually, later in the show. And it's beautiful and lovely because we're still in the tide of the equinox, even though officially that specific split-second moment happened yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
We're still in the juice of it. We're still in the tide of it.
Right.
Yeah.
And speaking of juice, we have... Yet another fruit that is very sacred to this time is the apple.
Yes.
And it is considered in all the different traditions where you have goddesses that hold the golden apple, the apple of immortality, the tree of life. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that these are, it holds the soul.
Yes.
And they're reborn, and we may not all know, but a lot of us have learned that when you cut the apple in half, you look at it, it is the pentagram.
Right.
and it is the holding of the soul in that particular aspect with the seeds.
Right.
So there is, you know, always the quest that you have to go get the golden apple or to get the apple or to
get it back because the bee tricked you and took it from you. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
See, so there's all these things because this is yet another part of the concepts of harvest and fruits and the dynamics that we see in the bigger picture.
Yeah, yeah. And just as an offering, there are some other deities that are connected to this time of the year. If you feel like learning more, you know, this is just a jumping off point. We're not going to talk about the details of these gods, but just some names in case you are wanting to learn a little bit more about potential gods to work with during this time of the year. One is Amaterasu, who's a Shinto goddess. She's the goddess of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Her story is very sweet. I encourage you to look her up. Also, Apollo,
who's
Greek, the god of sun. He carries the sun through the sky. There is also Horus in Egyptian mythology, another solar deity connected to the sunshine. So there is this the sun now starts to have a little less power.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a transitional time for those gods of those solar deities.
Right, right.
Also Lu, who just one holiday ago was the main dude.
Right.
Lunasa is all about the god Lu, and we'll talk a little bit more about that.
And that actually would have been first harvest.
Absolutely, that's right. Sulis, who, and Sulis Minerva. Sulis is Celtic. Minerva is Roman, and then when the Romans got to England, they said, oh, that's Sulis? She's just like our Minerva. We'll just call her Sulis Minerva from now on, because that's how the Romans were. So they are those two goddesses, or one goddess, depending on how you want to look at it,
right,
are also connected to the sun, to this time of the year, to the wisdom and the healing that comes when you're in balance. Sulis
exactly.
is a goddess of healing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Germanic goddess, Sunna. She's a solar goddess.
Uh-huh.
In the Norse tradition, the sun is a goddess and the moon is a god.
True. There are a few of those cultures that have the...
Yeah, which is not necessarily that common, but there are a few of them out there that reverse the... But we consider, I think most of us consider the moon a more feminine, energetic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because of menstruation and the tides and all that fun stuff.
Right. Something I don't know anything about these days. Oops. And there's also some that I think at this point you can even consider Eve from the Assyrian before the Christian.
Right.
But Assyrian, she was a goddess, a mother goddess, and she basically gave birth. But her spouse, interesting enough, is a serpent.
Mm.
And would, you know, of course, wrap itself around the tree of life. And she created the serpent to be part of the dynamics as a spouse. So if we're going to take it beyond the symbolic serpentine energy, it's interesting that that particular energy also represents the time of going light to dark.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
And we have others that we can talk about, especially if we're going to get into the dark one. And, you know, we have the darker, the dark queen, the ones that are considered, you know, pretty intense. You've got Morrigan, and you've got some of these others that are very intense dark energy. But that's going into the darkness. That's moving into that aspect of the underworld.
Right. As we get closer, so, you know, this is a transitional time. This is we're in between.
Mm-hmm.
Being in balance is being in between, right?
Right.
So as we descend closer to Samhain, as we get closer to Halloween and the energy of that darkness and the veil being thin and being able to touch base with the ancestral dead and all of that, those gods and goddesses that are a little bit more in the darkness, a little bit more those underworld gods, that's when they're in their fullness. That's when they're in their full power, when they're easier to communicate with, the Morrigan and those others.
Yes.
Yeah. Urushkagul and
some of the ones. It's interesting also, when I was doing some of my research about Diana, you know, Diana being obviously what we have thought of as a virgin goddess because of that, but she originally was a mother goddess.
Mm.
And And she basically shifted from creatrix of all yet to come. She divides herself into light, and, you know, which becomes Apollo,
yeah,
and herself, who is the night.
Mm.
And then they eventually, as the male energy of the Romans took over, they kind of gave her the bow and the arrow and the hunt and
the virginity,
that kind of a thing, you know.
Yeah.
But it was fascinating when I was watching, as I read the growth that goes on. I mean, I would like to avoid making it a negative, like, oh my God, they took over this and did this.
Mm.
But I would like to say the growth of what they did and how they incorporate, just like you were talking, Sulis and Sulis Minerva.
Yeah.
To try and make it acceptable.
Right. Well, and, you know, this is a whole other topic, but for the most part, the Romans were like, oh, that's your God? Oh, that sounds like our God. So we'll just say it's the same thing.
Right.
They weren't trying necessarily to force their gods on anyone else, although that's a whole other long topic.
Which we probably will get into on another show.
Oh, absolutely.
For sure.
Get me started on the Romans. Man, it's hard to get me to shut up.
And just consider the fact of what we can do there.
The other thing I would want to offer is looking at how the Wheel of the Year impacts where you live. And we talked a little bit about this in a previous show at some point, but, you know, here, we're most definitely in a second harvest.
Uh-huh.
And even though the equinox was yesterday, this weekend we're going to have high 90 temperatures. It's not like, oh, it's now the fall, get your winter coat. It doesn't happen like that here.
No.
So understanding the Wheel of the Year in your own environment and where you live and seeing what is coming into harvest. Is it the cold? Is it time to start harvesting that chill in the air?
Right.
Is it already snowing where you live? But looking at what is happening in the environment. So when you do create ritual, when you do sink into doing something from a spiritual perspective for your religious practice, that you're honoring what's actually going on in your environment and not necessarily what that book about Wicca or that thing about paganism on the internet told you to do.
Exactly.
Making it fit you and your life and your environment.
Because that is what especially the craft is about,
yes,
about the incorporation of where you are in this particular wheel,
mm-hmm,
of energy. And I firmly see that's what's made it more viable, because we change according to what's in our life.
Right.
And not dogmatically sticking to one thing no matter what.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, that creates rigidity, and then things get broken and fall apart and die.
Exactly, which eventually will be what we talk about later in the year, but, of course, we're not there yet. So we're basically, as you say, at that moment between, mm-hmm, one and the other, and that moment of holding that the opposites on either side.
Yeah.
So just very much like the scales that, you know, are held.
We're in the sign of Libra.
Yes, that's true.
Yep.
I forgot that. I was getting so excited about other things.
Yeah.
But, yes, it is the time of Libra, the time of a bringing balance. And it's not just inner or outer. It's all.
Right.
All.
Absolutely.
So I know that. And, you know, for us, we even have to honor the ones that are around us. So what would we do in a hypothetical ritual, not what we're planning on doing, obviously a little bit at the end.
Yeah.
But how would we create a ritual for this time frame?
Mm. Well, personally, in my family, and because, you know, I have a public group that I participate in ritual with. I,
mm-hmm,
have a coven group, my private practice group, and then I have my familial group. And what we often do for most of the holidays, actually, is have a feast.
Mm-hmm.
And for Lammas and for Mabon, we try to have foods at our feast that are seasonal, because we do live in a world and an environment where we can get a hold of fruit and vegetable all year round, whether it's in season or not.
Yeah.
So we try to even go to the farmer's market and,
mm-hmm,
get food from local growers,
right,
create a feast to honor the harvest. And then, very much like what our secular Thanksgiving looks like, we talk about what we're harvesting and,
mm-hmm,
what we're proud of and what,
mm-hmm,
we've accomplished.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's a simple meal that is an impactful ritual.
Right. I know that when my last husband, Matt, he loved Thanksgiving. He said it was the one time you don't have to worry about giving or receiving gifts or trying to figure out where, you know, it fits in the calendar of Mother's Day, Father's Day, birthdays, Christmas, or whatever. It was because you came together and you became family. If you didn't have family, you had family that was not biological. It was that gathering.
Yeah.
And ever since that process, it's been sort of like I see that as really the one time you can participate in something that is totally with nothing about that consumerism, and we can give our love, we can receive love, we can give time and attention, you know, those things that we don't often, I think, value as much on the other times of the year because we're so busy trying to get things done to, quote, get it wherever we want to get it done, too,
right.
You know, and I think... So my looking is, you know, I don't have the external family, but I sort of decorate my house, and we kind of get it organized.
Right.
So, and that's how I do a ritual.
Nice.
Yeah.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hooter Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30. Kendala's Corner, starring Kendala Kambisa and Michael Correll, Mondays 5 to 7. The Crystal Silence League Hour, hosted by John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6. In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7. The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30. The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, starring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, Fridays 6 to 7. And Liquid Libations with Andrea Weston, Saturdays 5 to 7. All time specific, at 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
We are back. Yes. Very quickly, we need to say something about, yes, the Mystic Fair, which will be October 15th and 16th, right around the corner, from 10 to 5 each day, free parking, and admission is free with all kinds of wonderful vendors and
readers.
I know there's going to be an aura chakra person that does these photographs that are really neat.
Oh, yeah, those are fun.
Yeah. And
Santa Rosa at the Veterans Building.
Yes, it is. Yep. And we will have some kind of unique things that they will be putting out. I know there's something about get a wristband for $3 and you'll get discounts throughout the fair at different vendors that are going to be participating.
Cool.
So that's nice. So look forward to seeing anyone who's in the area coming.
Yeah, stop by and say hello.
Good tea place. And the tea room.
That's right.
Yeah. Lost it for a minute here.
The All Hallows Enchanted Evening at the Muir, it's John Muir, Muir Tea House on the 22nd of October in Sebastopol, California. We're going to do a little tea and tarot where Elvira and myself and Pollyanna Costa, who's another talented reader, will be doing readings that part of the entertainment. Mm. And then after the delicious meal and the readings, we'll be having a Victorian seance. I'm going to get a couple more, and I'm going to have folks do some spirit board conversation with the dead.
Oh, my. I'm going to enjoy this.
Spooky.
Totally.
It really appeals to my dramatic nature.
And you never know. We might get a knocking on the door somewhere.
I'll be scared.
I know. Okay, with that, we are going to go to the wheel.
Yes. So Elvira and I thought it would be interesting and fun to go through the wheel of the year and just name what these holidays are and what the origins of those words are. And part of the reason behind this is because me, Phoenix, I have some sensitive feelings. And I thought it would be good to make sure people know the history of these things. I think sometimes we read something in a book or two books or five books, and we read something online or a teacher says something, and we just take that as the gospel. And sometimes we don't ask questions, and sometimes we just go, okay, that yes, I trust you, I value you, I read your book, and I know that you're a skilled and talented witch, and I'm just going to go with it. And that's fine, absolutely. But there are energies behind these words. There are meanings behind these words, and we want to share some of that with you. So there you have it.
All right. So go for it, darling. You
yes.
started the words. Let's go.
Okay. So we're going to start with Samhain, which is actually spelled Samhain in English, right?
There you go.
Samhain is a Celtic word. It's Samhain is Gaelic. You can, you know, if you know anything about Gaelic, which is so complicated for me, I'm not good with language. It is actually a translation of New Year.
Mm-hmm.
And the roots of that word is New Year. And they can trace back Samhain and the worship of Samhain to what some ancient folks, the Celts, were doing. There is historical evidence of such. And we'll talk more about that in another show. We're not going to dig into the nitty-gritty of all of these holidays right now, just more of the origins of the words.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Then we get to winter solstice or Yule. And the word Yule is actually from Old Norse. It was an old winter holiday in the Norse tradition. And then in more modern times, it became connected to the 12 days of Christmas, the Yuletide holidays.
Right.
Right. Right. Then we go to Imbolc, I-M-B-O-L-C, Imbolc, or Candlemas, which is in February. It's believed that this is originally an Irish word, that Imbolc, which translates as belly.
Mm-hmm.
And the belief is that during this time of the year is when the lambs were giving birth. So there was this milk, ewe, fresh lamb, babies type of energy, and that belly energy. And then later, Candlemas became the Christianized version of that holiday.
Mm-hmm.
So it became connected to the Mother Mary.
Right, and first light, the light
yes.
dawning.
Right, right, which is very much Mary
yes.
energetic.
Yes.
Then we get to the spring equinox, which is happening in the southern hemisphere right now.
As we speak.
And it's often called Ostara. And Ostara is a Germanic word. And it is connected to the goddess Eöster, who was a spring maiden. However, Ostara wasn't actually used by the ancient Germanic peoples to describe the equinox. That was actually brought into modern paganism by Aidan Kelly in the 1970s.
Senior.
Yes, Aidan Kelly Senior. So this word Ostara, although it makes sense, it fits.
Right.
You know, it totally, of course, Eöster, who's the spring maiden, and she brings the heralds of newness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Ostara, new
mm-hmm.
spring, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get to Beltane, which is a Scottish word.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Celtic and Norse influence, if you haven't already caught on here. Beltane is a word for fire. This was a fire festival. It was really getting into the heat and the passion of that time of year, that heat of late spring, early summer. Then we get to the summer solstice, midsummer, or Litha. Literally, this is, it's a planetary thing,
mm-hmm.
the summer solstice, just like
the equinox.
It's a planetary thing. But the word Litha was also brought into modern paganism by Aidan Kelly, which is a word he got from Bede, who is a monk from the around 700.
Roman timing.
Right. And he wrote a lot about what the Scots and the Celts were doing or had done or whatever. He's considered a pretty awesome historian. And Aidan Kelly took a lot from him and from Tolkien
mm-hmm.
and a few other sources in a lot of the writings that he did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's greatly influenced modern witchcraft and modern Wicca.
Right.
So there's that. Then we come to Lunasa, or Lammas, which was the holiday right before this one that we're on today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a Gaelic word again. Here we go.
Yes.
And it translates as the month of August. I mean, it's not really that exciting. But it's also a harvest word.
Right.
And then later, the Christianized version of that became Lammas or Loaf Mass.
Right.
The harvest festival.
Right.
And the breaking of bread and the celebration of all of that joyous, fun stuff. Which brings us again to where we are today. with the fall equinox and the word Mabon, which is when I get something stuck in my craw. So Mabon is a Welsh word. It comes from the Mabinogion, which is a collection of Welsh myths,
mm-hmm.
very ancient set of stories that were written down by monks, but they come from much older Welsh mythology. And it translates, Mabon translates as the son of the mother. And the mother is Madron or Madrone. And there's this whole mythology around Mabon and Madron. There's this whole story. But in the Mabinogion, Mabon is mentioned as almost a footnote. It's like a one sentence, like a one little thing. And Aidan Kelly also brought this word in as the new pagan, the new Wicca moniker for
mm-hmm.
the equinox.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the one I don't like. The others make sense. Litha makes sense. Ostara makes sense, but Mabon makes absolutely no freaking sense. That word has nothing to do with the equinox. It has nothing to do with this holiday. And since that word has, because, you know, Aidan Kelly, he has a poet's soul, and he definitely looked to make things in witchcraft more beautiful and poetic.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of what we do, we can trace back to his writings and the things that he's done. This isn't information that's hard to find. A simple Google search, you'll find pages
mm-hmm.
and pages of this information.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happened since 1970 or 78, depending on which of his publications you're looking at, is modern witchcraft, modern Wicca really grabbed onto these titles and kind of ran with it, which is fine. You know, I'm not holding any judgment. Actually, Starhawk, who's one of the founders of the reclaiming tradition that I practice in, is actually believed to have been the person that caused Mabon to be the word that people really started using. She picked it up from Aidan Kelly, wrote it in the spiral dance. All of a sudden, everyone's saying it.
Right.
So, but now stories have been written about Mabon, and this one word, one sentence, almost footnote about this character in Welsh mythology that we really don't know anything about has been turned into this huge thing.
Does this sound a little familiar maybe with what's gone on in the more, shall we say, Catholic points of reference where you take the Horus, Osiris, and Isis myth, Madonna and Child,
right.
and ran with it with
right.
great integrity
right.
to their own structure of their religion.
Sure.
And I think that is to say we grow, we expand, but we, shall we say, not roll over all other things to make this the one and only, and if not said or used, you are wrong. It's just another way to describe this time frame. So I think,
yes,
for you and for me, sometimes using this word may slip out because it's been so commonplace in our lifetime.
Right, right.
Okay, we weren't in 1800s when people were talking maybe in a different version of what this is.
Right.
So this has become that. But it is also something that if you want to be a purist, isn't really part of the pure traditional way of description and following that energy pattern we've been talking about.
Right.
But it is just as good
yes.
and just as valid.
Yes.
It just, you have to know where it's coming from and accept if that's what you want or make the decision that you don't want to use that. You want to use fall equinox, autumn equinox. These
right.
are things that
right.
make it maybe more acceptable for you as a person to honor that balance.
Right. Right. And, you know, the a lot of the roots of what modern witchcraft and especially Wicca look like right now
mm-hmm.
is from these folks in the 70s and 80s who were trailblazers,
mm-hmm.
Kelly being one of them, Isaac Bonowitz being another, Starhawk being another, Z Budapest.
Oh, definitely.
You know, these are people who were trailblazers for what Wicca and witchcraft looks like now.
Yes.
But I feel it's important to know our roots and to know where these things come from and to have an understanding. And you know, use all of these words because they are our vernacular now.
Mm-hmm.
They are.
Mm-hmm.
The equinox is Mavan. And no matter who stands on the mountaintop and says, but that's not the origins, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Because now it's become that.
Right.
But I just like, you know, I always tell, oh, really? Did you know where the origins of that were? Like, I find it fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
you know.
And I know that, you know, our time is drawing close, and we have maybe many more things that we'll want to discuss about it. But truthfully, the lineages of people that follow it, I mean, just as we know, we may change from being Wicca to Catholicism to Mormonism to Judaism to any number of these things, back again to, you know, witchcraft or whatever, we utilize what we feel speaks to us at this time. And I think that's where I keep saying I may not agree with some of the things, but I also do have a firm grasp of what growth and life is going to be if you go life positive, as my father would have said, mm-hmm. in that process.
Right.
To grow.
Right.
And in that way, we need to do our yeah. little ritual before okay. our time is up.
All right, folks. So now we're going to just do a little honoring and acknowledgement of the equinox together as a group. Even if you're listening to this podcast 4 years from now, we're still a group.
We are still
That's
a group.
Deep. All right. Let's take a breath together. And breathe, and as you breathe in, feel how that breath cycles through your body. Feel your lungs expand. Feel the air pump blood through your veins. Notice your heartbeat. And for just a moment, notice the balance in your own body. Do you feel balanced? And what might you do in this moment to bring yourself more into balance? And take another breath.
I set my face to the dark. I will travel with the sun through the dark. I will go with confidence in the deepest dark. Though about me the dark may grow, the gods and goddesses are always at my side, guiding me to the light.
Take a moment to let those words sink into your consciousness, your subconsciousness, your awareness.
And I think, with all honesty, the balance that we seek is always within us. Happy equinox.
Blessed be.
Blessed be. We have to say certain things now next week.
And now to business.
And now to business.
Enough with that witchy nonsense.
We would love to leave you just sitting in the clouds, but it does tend to be bad with dead air time. You know how that is.
Yeah, we're all going to trance on this show.
And that'll
be silence.
And silence. Not a good thing. So based on that, we will be doing the new moon.
New moon on the new moon.
On the new moon. This is going to be even more exciting because we were like a day off on this one. We're going to be right on it.
Yeah.
So, and in that marvelous, marvelous tone, I just want to say thank you for bringing so much knowledge that we share each day and each time that we meet. And obviously you are a great hostess to co-hostess, and I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate you, too.
Yeah. Kissy, kissy.
Oh.
We have a lot of fun, and a lot of times this is just spent trying to get as much information to you but not sound so preachy and make it fun.
Yeah.
And obviously I'm sitting here as it's getting darker, and we haven't turned any lights on, and we might even get a little woo. But do check out our lovely altar when it gets posted.
Yes, I'll post that picture. Also, last week's picture of our altar didn't make it out, so I'll post that and our equinox altar. You'll see those pictures on our Facebook page, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron on Facebook. And we also have a website, the witchpriestesscauldron.com, and it talks about the shows that are upcoming.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a place where you can click on links for the last four shows that we've had, so you can get up to date if you're not already.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a place where you can request to be a guest. And that's something we're going to be doing down the road. It's not, you know, we have our shows planned out for the next month or two. But down the road, we'd like to start having some guests who have special information on certain topics or have written books or, you know something amazing or special that Elvira and I have no concept of. And eventually we'll also do some readings on the air and make ourselves available during the show.
I think we were planning on doing that somewhere around Samhain.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think that so everyone can get that one going, and we may even try to perk up and do call-ins.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, yes. But so it's an evolving show. It isn't going to be always just us babbling away, but it's also
but
getting
us. The time it is.
Oh, well, I love my own voice too, darling, you know.
Yeah.
So, but again, the fact that we are trying very hard to keep the interest of each other up so we don't sit here and snore, you know.
Yeah.
And we also have, you know, a lot of fun facts that we kind of try to keep going and show. So definitely tune in. We will certainly be here to amaze and amuse.
Yes. Yeah. And next week on Friday at 6:00 Pacific time, we'll be back to talk about new moons and dark moons and moon void, of course, and more talk of darkness.
Oh, my goodness.
And the goodness that comes from the darkness.
Yes. You know, it's even getting interesting because I have a grandmother clock chiming away in the background. We're going to get a little bit more of the atmosphere, I think, as we get closer to our time.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, but as we say, merry meet and merry part and merry meet again.
Yes. Merry meet next week.
Truly.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.